He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Welcome. It's so great to have you with us on this Saturday. And yes, spring is here. And isn't that nice? Just listening to that forecast and like this mild weather. I'm sure you do as well after a very long, brutal winter. Not to say there couldn't be, you know, some more snow sometime in the next week or two, but we're praying that it's all gone now. Hey, have you ever thought of mentoring somebody? I don't care how old you are, if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, or 80s. Have you ever considered being a mentor? And if not, maybe you've said to yourself, well, I don't really have anything to offer. Who am I to think that I could, you know, offer wisdom or expertise or a guiding hand to someone? Well, we got someone who's going to challenge you on that perspective today. His name is Jim Stump. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes, and he's been mentoring student athletes at Stanford University in California for many years, and he's going to talk about the power of one-on-one, discovering the joy and satisfaction of mentoring others. So especially if you're in youth ministry or some kind of church leadership, I encourage you to stick around. And if you know somebody who is in, you know, one of those fields, maybe encourage them to tune in for the next 50 minutes or so, because I believe you will be challenged, you'll be encouraged, and you'll get some good practical help on the whole aspect of mentoring and really how Jesus was the master mentor, and how if we're going to really follow him and model him in our lives, then we need to consider that very, very prayerfully. So, and I'll tell you about my own experience in being challenged to be a mentor as well. That's coming up in just a few minutes here on the Faith Radio. First, let's take a look at some of the faith and culture related stories in the news this week. I found this kind of interesting. If you, I don't know if you're Protestant or Catholic, what your background is theologically, but religious leaders are saying that Pope Francis has quietly started a new era in relations between the Roman Catholic Church and Pentecostals. The Pope recorded an iPhone video back in January on the phone of a friend of his with ties to the Pentecostal movement. Well, the Pope's friend then played this video for some Pentecostal pastors here in the U.S., and that greeting has gone viral. For years, Pentecostal movements have been gaining parishioners from the Catholic Church, especially in Latin America. In fact, the Catholic Church has lost a lot of members in South and Central America to the Pentecostal movement. But in this video, Pope Francis calls the Pentecostal pastors his brothers and says they should work together for Christian unity. One Pentecostal leader says that small gesture did more to heal the rift than the past four decades of dialogue between the two churches, one church in the denomination of Pentecostals. By the way, if you look at the stats, Pentecostals, Charismatics comprise about one quarter of the world's 2 billion Christians. About 25% of Christians would call themselves Pentecostals or Charismatics. So a real breakthrough. And boy, this Pope has done some really interesting things in the last year or so. And we'll have to see what transpires because of this new outreach between the Pentecostals and the Catholics. Now, here's some other faith news that might interest you. Did you read the book Heaven is for Real? That book, which was a New York Times bestseller, I don't know how many weeks it was on the list, but did extremely well. That book is being turned into a movie. It's been turned into a movie, and it's going to be releasing on April 16th. If you're not familiar with it, it tells the true story of 4-year-old Colton Burpo, who had a near-death experience in the operating room. He later told his parents that he'd been to heaven, and he revealed things about deceased relatives and things that had happened that his parents had never told him. never told him. Film producer Devin Franklin says they feel God directed them to the perfect little actor to play the part of Colton. His name is Connor Corum. He's from Ohio. Mr. Franklin says, little Connor had never acted a day in his life. The odds of finding a five-year-old kid to play Colton was not in our favor, but God really sent Connor to us. Wow, that is very cool. I've seen some previews, and he is just adorable. And I think you are going to love this movie. The film also stars Greg Kinnear as Colton's father. It opens, as I said, on April 16th, just a little before Easter. What great timing, huh? And something to invite your friends to, friends maybe that have never considered the Christian faith. And could be a movie that will really open up some dialogue on Christianity. So once again, April 16th, Heaven is for Real. I happen to know the author who helped Todd Burpo, Colton's dad, write the book, Heaven is for Real. Her name is Lynn Vincent. She's written several bestsellers of her own, but she also does a lot of ghostwriting. She actually ghostwrote Sarah Palin's book, Rogue, and then Heaven is for Real, and she's excited about this movie coming out. Well, we do get emails here at Faith Radio, and if you have a question for us about faith and culture, about marriage, parenting, family issues, I'd love to hear from you. Heard from Brian in Bloomington, and he writes this. Dear Dr. Bill, recently we had our first child, a little girl who's now 2 months old. I'm asking this question on behalf of my wife. She's been feeling overwhelmed by all the parenting advice we've been getting from our friends and family. Sometimes these well-meaning people even contradict each other. My wife and I are learning as we go, but I feel like telling these people just to mind their own business. Is that wrong? Well, Brian, you are not alone. A lot of new parents say they get bombarded with advice from friends and family members and coworkers, people at their church. What I would say, it's important for you to remember that most people who offer that parenting advice are simply well-meaning folks who want to help. You know, they've raised their own kids, they've been there, done that, and they genuinely care about you and your wife, and they're trying their best to share what they have learned with you. On the other hand, there will always be a few know-it-alls who, I guess they kind of take pleasure in pointing out your mistakes and telling you the right way to do it, the right way to parent your child. Dealing with these individuals can be frustrating, and it sounds from your email like you've just about had it. When responding to these more know-it-all variety people, I found it's very helpful to say something like this. Thank you so much for your helpful advice. We will certainly consider it. Okay, memorize that one, Brian. Thank you so much for your advice. We will certainly consider it. That little phrase can be particularly helpful if the unwanted advice is coming from, let's say, an in-law or your own mom or dad. Another helpful technique you can use is thank the advice giver and let them know that you are basing your parenting on the advice of respected child development experts, like, you know, a third party. And a great place to find that advice, by the way, is Focus on the Family. You know, I worked there for 8 years, and they have a great book called The Complete Book of Baby and Child Care. It was written by 26 family physicians and pediatricians. And I've recommended it to so many new parents, not just new parents, but parents who have younger children or even teenagers. It's really helpful. The Complete Book of Baby and Child Care, out from Focus on the Family. You can find out more about that by going to their website, focusonthefamily.com. Well, Brian, thank you so much for writing. I'll be praying for you and these advice givers in your life. And again, a lot of people, they're just trying to help. So just thank them and be gracious. Well, I'm Bill Meyer. You are listening to the Faith Radio Network. It's 13 minutes past the hour, and coming up next, we're going to talk about mentoring, the power of one-on-one, discovering the joy and satisfaction of mentoring others. Our guest, Jim Stump, joins us in just about a minute and a half here on the Faith Radio Network.
You know, parents often complain that their children don't understand the value of money and have no idea how to handle it. Well, how can we expect them to know something we haven't taught? I think it's a good idea to bring kids, and especially teenagers, into the adult world of money management. Let them get a feel for what it takes to balance a budget. I knew a doctor with four daughters, for example, who gave each of them an annual clothing allowance starting at the age of 12. These girls had to budget the money throughout the year for everything they needed. The youngest girl was a little impulsive, and she celebrated her 12th birthday by spending her yearly allowance on an expensive coat. By the following spring, she was down to shredded stockings and frayed dresses. It was difficult for her parents not to intervene, but they had the courage to stand back and let her learn a valuable lesson about money management. A single mother invited her 15-year-old son to help figure the family's income taxes. When the boy saw the hidden costs of running a household, things like paying mortgage interest and insurance premiums, he was shocked. He had no idea that it took so much money to exist before you started even having fun. What must be taught is that everything is a trade-off. If you spend money for one thing, you won't have it for something that might be more important. You can teach your children that there's no such thing in life as having it all.
Hear more at MyFamilyTalk.com.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 877-93-FAITH. Why don't you jot that down, 877-93-FAITH. And in fact, if you call us in the next 45 minutes or so, give us your name, address, phone number, email address. We'll put you into a drawing for a copy of one of these great books, The Power of One-on-One by Jim Stump. That's going to happen at the end of the hour. So why don't you call us now, 877-93-FAITH. And my guest is Jim Stump. He is the founder of Sports Challenge. He has been a one-on-one mentor to many hundreds of Stanford student-athletes over the past 40 years. Stanford, of course, in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's also served as chaplain for the San Francisco 49ers and the San Francisco Giants. Jim is a graduate of Wheaton College. He lives in California with his wife, Linda. And Jim, welcome to Faith Radio. Do we have Jim? For some reason, I'm not hearing Jim. Jim, are you there?
Hello?
Oh, now I hear you. Thank you.
Okay, there we are.
We had a little technical issue here in the studio. Thanks so much for spending part of your Saturday with us. And your new book is called The Power of One-on-One, Discovering the Joy and Satisfaction of Mentoring Others. How did you first get involved with mentoring student-athletes at Stanford, Jim?
Well, out of Wheaton College, I joined the staff of Campus Crusade for Christ, and their Athletes in Action division was just beginning. And I wound up going to Europe for 2 years and set up their program with the European Olympic Committees. And when I came back, I was asked by them to direct a football conference in Southern California. And there were two young men there at that conference out of the 100 that were there from all over the country. And there were four to a room, one staff person, and then three athletes. And two of the three in my room were the only two Stanford athletes that were at the conference. And one of them was Jeff Seaman, who went on to play with the Minnesota Vikings for a number of years. And the other one was Dennis Sheehan, who was a cardiologist here in the Bay Area. But those two were young in their faith, and they had a lot of questions, bright guys. And I had just come back from Europe, where I had been forced to do a lot of study in apologetics to be able to survive, actually, from a faith standpoint. And so I had answers to their questions, and they said, boy, we need you at Stanford. There's a lot of guys on the football team that are asking similar questions, and would you please come? So I did that next year, and started by speaking to the whole football team. The head coach said, if Jeff Seaman is recommending you, then would you like to speak to my team and present yourself as a resource and what you're planning on doing? So I did that, and there were out of that meeting, there were five people who admitted to being believers. But eight more. million believers in the next couple of weeks. And by the end of the second year, the whole team met in a chapel service before the Rose Bowl, where we beat Michigan.
Wow.
So God did an amazing thing. This was back when the Jesus movement was really on fire, and Jesus was an issue on campus. And so God just put me in the right place at the right time with the right background, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful run at Stanford.
Now, did you stay with Campus Crusade for Christ during this time, or you? I know you at one point formed your own organization called Sports Challenge.
That's correct. After 4 years as the director at Stanford, they wanted to transfer me, and I really felt called uniquely to Stanford. So I left their staff, had wonderful relationships with them. There was no problem at all, but I just wanted to stay there and continue to meet with guys one-on-one and help them find a relationship with Jesus and then mentor them through life at Stanford.
So tell us about Sports Challenge. What's it all about?
Well, it's me, I guess, is probably the best way of saying it. It's not an organization as such. It's a 501c3. So it is a legitimate nonprofit, but I'm the only staff person.
You're the guy.
And I guess you'd have to say that. And what I do is I sit in the sports cafe on the Stanford campus in the athletic building, and I meet one-on-one with about 35 guys a week on an ongoing basis and help them find a relationship with Jesus if they're interested and then help them grow in that relationship.
That is beautiful, Jim. Tell us how the spiritual climate of Stanford has changed since you were first there back in the days when, as you said, the Jesus movement was going on in the 1970s. What's transpired spiritually at Stanford since those days?
Well, it has gotten a lot more negative, shall we say. It's like most university campuses. The students back in those days were basically saying, how can we go out and help to change the world in a positive way? And they were joining the Peace Corps and doing other things like that. Not very concerned about making money at all, even with a Stanford degree. And now it's kind of turned around. And basically, a lot of the student athletes that I meet with come into Stanford and say, what's the best major I can find that will make me the most money when I graduate from here? So that is that. But as far as the overall spiritual climate, I don't think there's nearly as much openness to faith, certainly among the professors. And I don't think there's an active anti-God situation, but it's certainly not as productive as it used to be, in my opinion.
It's great to hear, though, that there doesn't seem to be an anti-Christian bias at Stanford, because at many universities, and we talk to people all the time on this program that are at major, both state universities and private institutions, that say, man, you know, there are many on the faculty that have it out for us. Typically in the philosophy departments, professors who are trying to undermine the faith of the Christian young people who go there. But it sounds like perhaps the issue at Stanford is much more materialism and just, you know, living for the temporal than it is, having individuals on the staff that are trying to attack their faith.
Right. And you certainly do have those that will attack. And that is why I've chosen to meet with guys one-on-one for an hour each week on an ongoing basis, because I know life happens, and they're going to have issues that come up in their dorms or in the classroom or on the field athletically that they're going to need to talk about. And if a professor comes up with some random comment in a class, that young man's going to come and say, Jim, what does the Bible have to say about this? So I recall a few years ago we had a starting defensive end on the football team who came to Stanford, and he had some injuries, got frustrated, and every weekend, since he couldn't play, he'd get drunk and beat up guys. And you think, boy, that shouldn't happen at a place like Stanford, but it became a lifestyle. And so one of the few times that coaches have actually asked me to start meeting with someone, I started meeting with this young man at his request. I told him that I wasn't going to chase him, but if they wanted me to meet with him, he'd have to call me. So he did. And within a couple of weeks, he'd committed his life to Christ and really began to grow in that walk. And he was a human biology major, pre-med. And his junior year, he was taking a seminar that was very important to him being able to get into medical school. The professor was the one who was going to have to write his letter of recommendation. And in that seminar, the first day, the professor said, okay, I want each one of you to stand up and in one sentence tell me who you are. And when it came his turn, he was toward the end, when it came his turn, he thought, you know, I'm just going to say it. And he stood up and said, my name is, and I won't mention it, but he said, I am a follower of Jesus who has been totally forgiven for all of his sins. And he sat down. And, of course, everyone in the room whipped around and looked at him because he was highly respected, not only as an athlete, but as a very intelligent person. And the professor said, young man, I want to see you after class. And he thought, wow, there goes my chance of getting into med school. And when he went up to the professor after class, the professor said, I just wanted to thank you for being honest in who you are. I'm a follower of Jesus, too, but I didn't have the guts to say so.
Wow. Brought tears to my eyes, Tim. That's beautiful.
Yeah. So there are professors. Most of them have to kind of keep it underground because there are a lot of people on the faculty who will put you down if you have any semblance of faith and talk about it.
What about the moral climate at a school like Stanford? And I'm sure it's not that different from many other major universities. There's a lot of temptation for a young man on a college campus.
That's putting it mildly, Bill. The temptation is amazing. You know, it's not athletes at Stanford are not adored like they are at a lot of the what you'd call a more of a football factory schools, but they're still highly thought of, and there's a lot of people who would love to brag to their friends that they slept with a football player or a tennis player or whatever. So it happens. It happens a lot. The pressure is intense. And again, that's why I meet with guys on a weekly basis, so we can talk about stuff like that. And I can warn them that situations are going to be coming up and how to stand strong in those situations.
Do you think the average Christian college student today has a accurate biblical understanding of sexuality as God sees it? Or do you run into so many young people that think, you know, sex before marriage is no big deal and why would God have a problem with it?
Well, that seems to be the what this culture is selling to the young person, the high school and college student. And it's wrong. And it's a tough situation to deal with because the pressure is so strong from people who are not believers and even some who are believers who, like you say, have basically come to the fact that, hey, you know, God wants me to feel good. God wants me to enjoy myself. So, you know, what better way than to just run around and have sex with as many people as you can?
It's tragic. And you see the
it's devastating. It's devastating.
You see the fallout in our young people, and you hear about it every day. And well, Jim, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to dive into your book once again. The book is called "The Power of One-on-One: Discovering the Joy and Satisfaction of Mentoring Others." If you have ever considered mentoring, or maybe you never have, I want you to stick around because Jim's going to challenge your thinking on that. And if you know someone who perhaps is in church leadership or maybe in youth ministry or just has a love for others and maybe would like to consider being a mentor but doesn't know how to do it, stick around. We're going to talk about that with Jim in just a moment here on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. We'll take a quick break. Our phone number, 877-93-FAITH.
Real
real encouragement for an active walk of faith. Podcast audio of today's programs on Faith Radio in case you missed the show. The very latest on conferences and events in your area. It's all in one place and delivered right to your inbox from Faith Radio when you subscribe by email to myfaithradio.com. Head to myfaithradio.com and enter your email address in the subscribe box right at the top of the page, helping you connect faith to life every day at myfaithradio.com.
Here's what's ahead on the next Connecting Faith.
Is it possible to disagree with people without being disagreeable? Well, communications expert Tim Muehlhoff joins us on the next Connecting Faith to provide a strategy for having difficult conversations, helping us move from contentious debate to constructive dialogue. We'll learn how to navigate difficult conversations with truth and love and insights from his new book, I Beg to Differ.
Listen for Connecting Faith weekdays at noon on Faith Radio.
Continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
Welcome back. My guest is Jim Stump. He's the author of the new book, The Power of One-on-One, Discovering the Joy and Satisfaction of Mentoring Others. Jim mentored college students and still does at Stanford for many, many years. And Jim, Jesus was a mentor, perhaps our best model of being a mentor. Let's talk about how he mentored his disciples and what we can learn from that.
Well, he mentored them through relationship, basically. He chose 12, and that's where he spent most of his time. I think a lot of people think of the Sermon on the Mount as being kind of typical of the way Jesus walked through his life here on earth. But that was, I mean, when opportunities presented themselves, he certainly did speak to large crowds. But the majority of his time was spent with 12 men that he handpicked. And I'm not sure I would have picked those men just based on the way they're depicted in the scriptures, in the Gospels, before they saw the resurrected Jesus, because they certainly give me hope when it comes to, if Jesus could use those guys, maybe he can use me too. Because they seemed a bit dull and a bit insensitive, and they had trouble getting along with each other. But Jesus knew what he was doing, obviously. And so that was his goal. He just walked through life with them, and he called them to simply follow him. Those were the words that he said when he was recruiting, if you will. He just walked up to guys and said, follow me. And so he mentored and evangelized, really, by simply telling people to come and be with him.
Mm. And, of course, as followers of Christ, we are called to do something very similar. But I'm guessing we have a lot of people listening right now who've never considered mentoring, or maybe say to themselves, well, what do I have to offer? Or I'm not an expert, or gosh, I've made mistakes in my life. My guess is you would say, great, that's what makes you the best kind of mentor, that you're honest about those things.
Exactly. And you can imagine, Bill, with my background, you didn't mention, I grew up in a log cabin in the outback of Alaska, parents were missionaries, and so I certainly did not have the culture and the background that a lot of these Stanford students have that I meet with. But everyone is looking for relationship. I don't care who they are. They're looking for someone to love them and for someone they can love. And when someone will just reach out a hand, as it were, and say, hey, why don't we go grab a cup of coffee sometime? And then just get to know each other. And if that goes well, then say, wow, why don't we do this again next week? I've really enjoyed this time. And if that second meeting goes well, say, why don't we do this on a regular basis for 3 months and see where it goes? So instead of saying, I'm the great guru, I have all the answers, come and listen to me, it's not that at all. You just kind of walk through life with people and talk about issues as they come up. And certainly do that from the scriptural perspective. But it's not a situation where you say, come and sit down and open your mouth and let me cram all my wisdom in there. It's not that at all. It's basically an interactive thing. And, I happen to have been down the road a little bit longer than the guys I'm mentoring, but that's just the way it is. So now, people are looking for relationships.
Let me ask you this. The flip side of that is being a mentor is different from being a friend in some ways. How would you, I mean, obviously a friendship is a part of mentoring, but how does mentoring differ from just being a buddy?
Well, mentoring means asking questions and saying, you know, let's get into the scriptures and see what they have to say. And let's find out how Jesus would have answered that question. And then we go to the scriptures and say, this is what he said here. This is how we do it. I'm sure you remember a few years back when there was the big movement, WWJD, What Would Jesus Do?
Right.
And that was a good time, but I think probably a better question would be, what did Jesus do? Because when you say, what would he have done, that opens up Pandora's box. But if you say, what did he do? That's what the scriptures can show us. And we can go back and take that. And like you said, being a friend is incredibly important. But mentoring is that plus being in the scriptures together and just walking through life on an intentional basis.
Hmm. Now, in your book, Jim, you list 8 different principles for effective mentoring, and I'd love to kind of dive into some of those. We don't have to go through all 8 if you don't want to, but we certainly have time to do that, because I think for those folks that maybe have considered being a mentor, they may say, gosh, how do I get started? Maybe there's someone listening who is middle-aged, they have grown children, they're active in their church, and they're looking around at the young people there and saying, gosh, I see a lot of teenagers or young adults who don't really seem to have a lot of guidance, and maybe even some young couples who are thousands of miles away from their mom and dad and don't really have that kind of opportunity to have someone speak blessing into their life, whether it's into their marriage or into their parenting. Let's unpack some of those principles that you talk about in your book, The Power of One-on-One.
Okay. Well, first of all, the first principle that I talk about in the book is choosing well. And, of course, this is what Jesus did. He spent time in prayer. The scriptures specifically say that he spent the night in prayer before he chose those 12 men. And what a lot of people, I think, don't realize is that he chose 12 out of a pretty good number. So there were some people who didn't get chosen. And they may have had their feelings hurt initially, but Jesus was focused on what God was calling him to do. So it's I don't wind up mentoring every person I start meeting with because, you know, the Holy Spirit's going to tell you this person really has what we're looking for here. When I first joined the staff of Campus Crusade for Christ, I got to know Dr. Bill Bright, who was the founder of Campus Crusade, and one day I asked him what he looked for in a staff person. And he said, Jim, I look for 2 things. I look for a heart for God and a teachable attitude. So that's basically what I look for in someone that I'm going to be spending a lot of my time with, a heart for God and a teachable attitude. They may not have much of a spiritual background at all, but they really do have a heart for God. And I can tell that they're not going to argue with me on every little thing. They want to know. They want to learn. And I encourage asking questions. Don't get me wrong. In fact, that's one of the most important things that I think we can do. And I tell that to every guy I meet with. There's nothing that's off the table. Any question you have about any topic, we will talk about. But choosing people that they really have those 2 qualities is very, very important. Obviously, Jesus chose 12. I'm not nearly as good as he was, so I choose to meet with about 30 to 35 guys a week. And out of that, the cream begins to rise to the top. And that's where you really begin spending more and more and more of your time. Those people that set themselves apart as having a desire to really be a man of God.
Have there been situations, Jim, where you have had someone ask you to be their mentor and you've started meeting, but then after a time you've decided this is just, it's not right, it's not going anywhere, it's not productive, and have said, you know, I'm not sure this is really the best type of relationship? That's got to be a hard thing to say to someone.
It is, and it's happened rarely with me, Bill, frankly, but it has happened. And there are some guys that just sit down and look at you, and you can tell that, as the old saying goes, the porch light's on, but nobody's home. And you want people who will lean in and say, I've got some questions here. I want some answers. And so, yeah.
Now, how about now you mentioned a heart for God, which is what Bill Bright said, but I'm guessing you also obviously you've brought a lot of these athletes to Christ. You've shared the faith with them. So that means, or it says to me, you are willing to meet with a young person who maybe has at the time no background, no interest, hadn't really thought about the spiritual things of life, but there's something that tells you that at least they're open to it. What? How do you determine that?
Well, I don't chase anyone. So everyone who comes to me comes from being referred by a teammate. So if they will come to me, take the initiative to come and say, I'd like to start meeting with you, I have some questions, that's how I do that. And then I spend the first one or two meetings just getting to know them, them getting to know me. We talk about our spiritual journeys. And then with each one of them, no matter if they say they're a Christian already or if they grew up in the church or whatever, I walk through a little booklet that I happen to use called Would You Like to Know God Personally? It's kind of an expansion of the old Four Spiritual Laws booklet, but it's been updated, and I just think it relates better. For my use, and I walk through that with them, and I tell them, you know, at some point in your life, if you don't already have this relationship with God, you're going to want to. So because I believe that Jesus is in a relationship with him is the true answer to everything in life. So you're a bright guy. You're going to want to have this relationship at some point. So let me explain to you how that happens, and then when it's right for you, you can make that decision and that commitment yourself. And inevitably, I'd say probably, I hate to throw numbers around, but almost every guy I meet with becomes a follower of Jesus if they weren't already, because it does make such sense. And the person of Jesus is such an incredible person, not only from a historical standpoint, but the fact that people are still talking about him today lends credence to the fact that there's something here. And again, these bright guys want to know.
Now, the second principle you talk about in the book is investing in the relationship, and that is going to require some time and some energy, some dedication on the part of the mentor. Tell me what that involves.
Well, one of the first things I tell them is that I intend to be one of the best friends. And I want them to see me as someone who is safe, someone who they can trust implicitly. I tell all of them that nothing that they say to me at that little table where I meet all the guys, I say, this table is the safe zone. Nothing you say here will ever be repeated, not to my wife, not to anyone else, not to their coach. I let them know I'm never going to judge them for any actions or struggles that they choose to share with me. So I also let them know that I'm there for them. If they want to call me at any time of the day or night, I will be there for them. And obviously, you know, being a married man, I don't want to get a call at 2:00 in the morning saying, you know, a bunch of us were just sitting in the hallway in our dorm talking about stuff, and we had a question about global warming or something like that.
Let's hope not.
But I tell them that If you got a spiritual question, I'll do my best to answer it. And if I don't have the answer, we'll explore the scriptures together. And I've, through the years, 43 years that I've been at Stanford, I've mentored a lot of guys who are very, very smart guys. And I have quite a database of individuals who are way smarter than I am. And I'll just make some phone calls and come up with an answer that I feel makes sense and bring that back to them the following week. But I invest in their lives in other ways. I'm at practice with the football team. I'm at practice pretty much every day, and just being there with the guys. So it was described to me as the ministry of presence, just being there. A guy who played at Stanford back when John Elway was the quarterback there in the late 70s, went on to play in the NFL, made the all-decade team in the NFL. I was just with him this last week, and he said, you know, Jim, even though I wasn't always walking with the Lord at Stanford, every time I saw you out at practice, it reminded me that I needed to stand strong in my faith. So just being there sometimes is a very important thing to these guys. Mm-hmm. And it also lets them know that I'm committed to them. The following week when we get together, I can talk about, you know, an interception they made or a great run in practice or whatever. So they know that I'm not just there. I'm actually interested in what goes on.
It's powerful, Jim. Our guest is Jim Stump. He is the author of The Power of One-on-One, Discovering the Joy and Satisfaction of Mentoring Others. If you would like to get a copy of this book, we have three copies to give away at the end of the hour. If you give us a call right now, 877-93-FAITH, and give us your contact info, we'll put you into that drawing. It's 1146. I'm Bill Meyer, and this is the Faith Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break and be back with one final segment with Jim Stump after this.
Here's a quick reminder of the contest rules for drawings and promotions on Faith Radio. If you want something from Faith Radio, wait 30 days before entering again. Multiple entries by the same person will be discarded unless otherwise stated. Winning entries may be used for promotional purposes. Faith Radio is not responsible for problems with computers, phones, or mail delivery, but we'll do our best to make your experience a good one. Find a full list of contest rules online in full legal speak at our website, myfaithradio.com. There's a place to grow in your faith and share hope with friends and family, with practical resources and insight for your daily life, and it's right at your fingertips. At MyFaithRadio.com, find the latest podcasts from Faith Radio's original programs, encourage someone through prayer on PrayerWorks, or be challenged by the latest from our Faith Radio blogging team. It's just a small slice of what's available to you at MyFaithRadio.com. Log on today to find it's not just information, it's transformation.
Hello, I'm Dr. Randy Carlson from Intentional Living. Growing in faith works best when you're intentional. And Faith Radio can help. Their relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching can help you connect faith to life every day. And Faith Radio needs your support right now. It's one thing you can do today that will keep you and Faith Radio moving forward. Call 877-93-FAITH or go online to myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
And hey, welcome back. I want to say hi to our friends who are listening on Faith 1200 in the Fargo-Moorhead area today. And also, if you're listening on Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, thanks for taking us along on this Saturday. You can find our entire broadcast schedule, both for Monday through Friday and for the weekends, at myfaithradio.com. My guest this hour, Jim Stump, he is the author of The Power of One-on-One, Discovering the Joy and Satisfaction of Mentoring Others. For 40 years, Jim has been mentoring student-athletes at Stanford University in California and has had some amazing experiences along the way. We're talking about some of the principles that Jim lays out in his book, and one of those is teaching spiritual obedience. And my guess is that can be a little bit of a challenge, especially when you're working with young men who maybe have very little background in the Bible, very little understanding of God's, you know, rules for living, and you have to kind of gently guide them in those ways.
It's very true. And one of the things that I did a number of years ago was to get together a group of leaders who were student athletes who loved Jesus, and we went to the passage in the scriptures in the New Testament that talks about being an example to other believers in five different categories. And I had this group of people, there were about 18 of them total, that put this manuscript together. It was like a manifesto of who the type of people we should be at Stanford University as we represent Jesus in our faith, in our character, in the way we live life in purity. And it was a wonderful thing to see what they came up with. And then I went through it with them, and they went back and increased in some areas, decreased in others, made some changes, but eventually came up with a document that they were really excited about, that stood true to the scriptures. And they said, yeah, you know, especially in this area of purity, it's so difficult on the college campus today, and where, you know, girlfriends come to see you, and if they're going to spend the night in your room, and other people know you're a believer, those people are going to say, well, of course they're sleeping together, spending the night in the same room. So how do we handle that? Can we find some other people that our girlfriend can stay with, girls in a sorority or in a dorm where they can do that, where there's, you're not giving room for anyone to question what you're doing from a moral standpoint.
Which, of course, is what Paul talks about in being above reproach. And
exactly. Boy,
and student-athletes, while they're not pastors, they're certainly setting an example if they're calling themselves a believer on campus. So,
yes.
Jim, another principle you talk about in the book is learning to delegate wisely. What do you mean by that?
Well, people, Jesus, as he was walking through the pages of the Gospels with these disciples, he actually didn't give them assignments for quite a while. He made very few demands on them for the first year or two that they were together. And it wasn't really until his third trip into the area of Galilee, and this was almost 2 years into Jesus' ministry. Mark records the fact that he called the 12 to him, and he began to send them out two by two and gave them authority over impure spirits. And I believe the reason he sent them out two by two is that they wouldn't have gone one by one. They needed that that encouragement from someone else. So that was really the first time in the Gospels that we see Jesus actually delegating a meaningful task to his disciples. And he gave them some specific instructions before they went. I don't think he was being overly cautious. He just understood the fact that it takes time for people to understand a new way of thinking and acting. And he understood the importance of letting people learn at their own pace. And then recognizing he was obviously very sensitive because he was with them all the time. He recognized when they were ready to be pushed to the next level. So just by nature of being a student athlete at Stanford, these kids are extremely bright. They learn quickly. They're more mature and more disciplined than their peers as a whole, simply because they've had to demonstrate such a work ethic in order to excel at their sport. So and in the classroom. So by the time they come to Stanford, most of them have developed a pretty keen mind and a good work ethic. So there's a temptation for me to expect more from them than I might expect from other students. But I've learned the importance of just being patient with them. I don't want to send them out before they're ready. But I take them with me whenever I'm asked to speak at a local church or at a father-son breakfast or something like that. I take them with me, and when I deem the time is right, I have them actually stand up and share their own spiritual journeys with these people. Mm-hmm. And it's always a growing thing with them. But I have seen some really bad things happen through some of these athletes, not just at Stanford, but in other places, even with pro teams, where the word gets out that a guy has become a believer, and all of a sudden every church wants to have them in and have them share their testimony. And no one is feeding into their lives. No one is doing anything for them. They're just using them. And so I'm very reticent to having these guys go out and do that. But, you know, it's there's a balance in there. These athletes are obviously idolized during their college years, and it's easy for them to lose a sense of grounding and humility. But that's one thing I work with just by telling them stories. I'm a storyteller, Bill. The guys that I meet with all tell me that I'm a storyteller, and I think I do that because that's what Jesus did as you walk through the Gospels with him. He told stories, parables, and so I let the guys I meet with today learn from the lessons that I've had a chance to observe over in the principles I've had a chance to observe over the past 43 years at Stanford. And you're kind of third personing it. You're not looking a guy in the eye and say, here's what you need to do. I just tell them, here, let me tell you a story about a guy who was a linebacker here back in the 1980s. And I tell the story, but it applies exactly to what they're going through at the time. And they pick up on that real quickly.
Jim, we've just got about a minute left, and let me ask you if you could, just to issue a challenge to those folks who've been listening this hour and maybe considering mentoring, to just go for the gusto and actually do it.
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the main problems today, it's almost a lost art of mentoring and evangelism. But I would say you're never going to have all the answers. So just get started. Find someone and begin to meet with them. And I don't be intimidated by the fact that I meet with 30 to 35 guys a week. That's just something I do that I've chosen to do. I do it on a full-time basis. But find one person or maybe two people. Don't overload your schedule. And very, very important to create an atmosphere of safety and trust with someone that you're mentoring. And let them know that you are committed to them personally and to this relationship as a whole. And I think one of the most important things to recognize is the fact that wherever you are, wherever two or more of you are gathered together, there Jesus is in the midst. So realize that it's not just you there. Jesus is a very important part of that. And John Ortberg kind of talks about that in the foreword to the book, that Jesus is always there when there's more than two or more people gathered.
Jim, thank you so much for this wonderful book. Once again, the title is The Power of One-on-One, Discovering the Joy and Satisfaction of Mentoring Others. Jim Stump, may the Lord continue to guide and direct you in your work, and thanks for being our guest here on the Faith Radio Network.
Thank you, Bill. I've enjoyed it immensely.
Well, thank you for joining us today for this program on Faith Radio. My friend Austin Hill is up next with his program, Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, applying Christian principles to business and economics. You have a great week.